The Naive Theater of the Air presents Rewired by Matthew Broyles. Episode 25, The End of the World.
What the hell is going on down there?
Our link is still up. We're muted, not cut off.
The hell we aren't. Get a satellite update from Wendell, Aeolian and BDF HQ.
In the radio silence, the doctor set about gathering intelligence of her own. Ahania's queue was filling up quickly with calls for revolution, even job offers from some diaspora governments. Neither Brooklyn nor Texas, she noticed, desperate to possess anything or anyone that might stave off the growing unrest. She ran a filter through the missives, paring them down by region, when such details were provided. At least 100 of the messages were from Texas. VEF, disciples, anarchists, even a Baptist minister certain that the end times were upon them. At any other time in the past 28 years, she would have thrilled to see such a tidal wave of dissent against the rewired governments. But not today. Her experiments on the patients provided by Almerito showed nothing she hadn't seen a million times before. True, she'd only had a few hours with each, but despite her new suspicions, the phantom had not appeared anywhere in sight. Which either meant that it didn't exist, or that her consciousness was prevented from seeing it. Damn you, Waylon, she thought. Too clever for your own good, and too self-righteous to trust anyone with the keys to their own mind. She fumed silently. It was bad enough that the old Gabriella got lost in Waylon's journey through the cornfields of the neural net. But the idea that a gateway into the very makeup of her rearranged neurons could be floating just out of reach, and in the hands of her remaker no less, pushed her blood to the boiling point. It was easy enough to play the cocky bitch on the microphone. But part of her had wanted to scream out at the blundering old fool, to demand a chance to recover her lost self. He owed her that much, at the very least. Glancing behind her, she saw that the president was lost in a phone call, most likely with Secretary Wendell. Quickly, she flipped open a new message, addressing it to Urizen. Waylon probably wouldn't be checking his queue for a while, but she could not be as frank as she needed to be with everyone listening. She could not show weakness, not in public. But of course, weakness was something Waylon himself responded very readily to. It was a trait he had driven out of the Gabriella, he knew, and its absence ultimately drove them apart.
Waylon, this might seem like a strange thing for me to send, given what is happening as I write. But you need to know something. The old Gabriella is still here. I saw her today, more clearly than I have in years. She stirs in my consciousness when she hears your voice. She does not understand what happened to the mind she once occupied freely. I speak of her in the third person because I know that I became someone else all those years ago. You and I created the woman who speaks to you now, reluctantly, despite her instinct to curse you. For nearly 3 decades, I have wondered to myself, what if it could be undone? What if, mired in passion, in dignity, and pride, we hurled ourselves away from each other before we had a chance to think. Before we made some effort to repair the damage. I realize that I am the one who walked away. You don't know how many times I have rethought that day. Especially during those long years when it seemed certain that you had been killed. You may not believe it, but I grieved you. I cursed the lost opportunities, the progress we could have made together. I missed you, Waylon. And no one was more surprised about that than me. Today, at long last, after hearing your voice once again, I realized that there is still a chance. Working together, we may be able to bring Gabriella back. If there is even the ghost of a careworn hope, I beg of you to consider it. I don't want to. The woman we created doesn't want to. But Gabriella does. She wants to see through those eyes again. The heat of her hope urges me to bolt from this political rat cage and return to the science she once loved. She once loved so dearly. She wants to be free, Waylon. And she believes that you can make that possible. I don't know why, but she does. Her faith in you is strong. And I cannot resist its pull. Not now. Please, Waylon. Not for me. For her, the one who still loves you.
Something hot escaped the corner of her eye and slid down her cheek. With a fingertip, she caught it, looking down in shock at the rogue tear. This was supposed to be a ruse, an appeal to Wayland's soft underbelly. Yet even as she hit send, she knew that it was not so simple. Her words were true, regardless of their intent. She flipped back to the queue, with a quick glance at the president as he put away his phone and approached her.
If Lily's not back on the air within the hour, I'm turning this over to Wendell.
The room was suddenly quiet, the comtech silently lost in his headphones and dials. Grandpa Andreas seemed to judge Gabriella from the mantelpiece. She rose, turned his face to the wall, then returned to the desk.
Speak up, Waylon. Speak up before you are silenced again. This time for good.
As the night grew colder in Aeolian, the silence from the lab was positively deafening in the encampments outside. Tempers flared, and accusations began to cross the no-man's land between VEF supporters, disciples, and the ill-informed army perimeter. Being Texas, it was taken for granted that everyone present was armed. The soldiers' weapons were conspicuous and large as a result, a means to intimidate. But everyone knew it would only take a single bullet from an ordinary gun to send the whole scene into chaos and confusion. That possibility increased, with every word shouted in anger and bitterness across the prairie. It was only a matter of time. Unless the people got what they wanted. What they needed now, more than ever. Deep inside a camper, covered with useless camouflage, a small boy prayed.
Please send us, Dr. Lily. Hurry.
That was Weiss on the radio. Dr. Barrett and his assailant are dead.
Lily nodded, a controlled motion that betrayed little of the scattering emotions inside him. He did not feel sadness. Barrett had never been a friend. And yet there was a sense of loss, potential unrealized. That he could grieve for, but not now.
Then I need a camera. The diaspora needs to know, and they need a trustworthy source.
That's not what they want to know. If you speak and don't give an answer on the Vorn, they're going to go nuts.
They can't ask me for an answer I don't have.
They do it all the time. Even more so when you rise from the dead.
I'll tell them we're investigating it. That's all I can do. But I need to say something soon or we're going to lose this war before it starts.
It's already started. But if you can arrange a rhetorical ceasefire, I would be much obliged.
The colonel gestured to the comtech, who flipped on the video switch. A small camera unfolded from the top of the communications unit. Lily glanced into a window reflection, fixing his hair and collar as best he could. He did not possess the wardrobe for a comeback speech. His lab coat and rumpled black polo shirt would have to suffice.
Do we have a channel?
Say when.
When?
The comtech gave him a thumbs up, and every word Lily had ever wanted to say completely disappeared from his mind. Resisting the urge to panic, he reached back into the crannies of his youth, recovering a necessary component. He found it, wedged in among the plaudits and million-dollar grants where he had left it. Arrogance. It had fallen out of his arsenal over the past few decades, but today he needed it. Trying the garment on, he found that it still fit, if only just.
Citizens of the diaspora, as you can see, the rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. By me, of course. And by brave men like Colonel Haley and the Governor's Council who have kept my location safe from the malevolent forces outside our borders. Do not judge their actions. They've only done what I've asked of them. I come to you today as an ambassador of peace. If you know anything about me at all, you know that my life is dedicated to the stability and the prosperity of the diaspora and its people. Yet today I see that a cancer has taken hold of our proud society, one which threatens to erase all that we've fought for over these many years. The Vorn are a mystery, yes, even to me. But as I proved many years ago, no mystery is impenetrable. Right now, all of my resources are committed to bringing the truth to all who seek it. Like any scientific endeavor, this will take time. Thus, I implore you to remain calm as we conduct our research over the coming days. The only winner in a conflict among our people is the wired hegemony. If we are to retain our freedom, we must accept differences in opinion where no solid facts yet lie. This is the mark of an enlightened civilization, and we are presently the last such civilized people to walk this planet. Despite our disagreements, we have much more in common with each other than we do with our would-be oppressors and the world outside. Regrettably, there is a pressing reason why I bring this conflict to your attention. A few moments ago, my dear friend and colleague, Dr. James Barrett, was brutally murdered. We do not yet know why, as his assailant died shortly thereafter. Again, I stress to you, this is not the way to solve our differences. It is a waste in every sense of the word. The search for truth is now short one brilliant mind, one which we will sorely miss as we venture into the Vorn enigma. Dr. Barrett's assistant, Dr. Romana Vinson, has traveled through hostile territory to aid me in this quest, lest you doubt our sincerity or our unity of purpose. But let me be clear. I must confess that my old friend's enthusiasm for the prospect of transplanar communication drove him before the cameras a little earlier than I believed proper, given the many unresolved scientific questions that our data present to us. However, I'm not angry with him for doing what he felt was right. I have incurred far too many wounds for the same crime to judge him. And perhaps I needed a little push after being out of the spotlight for so long. Citizens, I tell you that the Vorn are indeed an observable psychological phenomenon. That is all I'm prepared to say for the moment, but rest assured that all moments to come will be dedicated to adding clarity to that statement. We will find the truth, and you will hear it if it's the last thing I say. In return, I ask for your patience. Reflect on our shared heritage and all that is to come for our society, the last free culture on Earth. It is worth protecting from our worst instincts. It is worth the best of us. Thank you.
An eternal second passed before the comtech switched the camera off, folding it back into the device. Lily's posture slackened. His muscles were sore from the weight of the address. The colonel approached, slowly.
Hardly the Vorn are among us, but it'll do.
Colonel, shots fired at checkpoint one. Man down.
Shit. Send backup and call Perez for reinforcements.
What the hell? I explained it very clearly.
You really have been out of it for a while, haven't you? Most of these people are the same ones who didn't trust their government 3 decades ago when it told them rewiring was the devil. Well, guess what? Now we're the government.
This is totally different.
Actually, it's very similar. We faced annihilation then, and it's still on the table today. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go kill some of my own countrymen for the good of the others.
Lily's skin paled as Haley stormed past him. He had failed. The one thing he could do to slow down the crisis was not enough. Its momentum was too great. Unless... He tried to shut the thought out, but it stayed there, hovering in his peripheral vision. The secret kept safe, waiting over the long years for the worst-case scenario. Was this it? If it wasn't, he would be hard-pressed to find one worse. First, though, he had to keep the iron hot.
Give me the headset. Unmute Washington.
Well?
Lily was still readjusting to hearing her voice again, and took a moment to respond.
Gabriella, I have bad news. James is dead.
What? How?
If Lily hadn't known better, he would have thought he heard a note of emotion there. He gave her humanity the benefit of the doubt and proceeded gently.
He was shot by his assistant. We don't know why, and we may not since James shot him back.
Did you hear it?
Yes, unfortunately. Then we retreated to an audience with a speaker for Brooklyn's disciples.
Caravelli, I may as well tell you, he's been kidnapping American psych patients and turning them into seers.
He what?
They were under care of Dr. Elaine Moskowitz, a specialist in rewiring side effects.
Why would he do that?
Why did he do this whole thing? Your guess is as good as mine.
But you have your theories.
Possibly. But James is not the only one I have theories about.
Fair enough. Quid pro quo?
If you like. You first.
I wonder if James was banking on the disciples getting the upper hand after the Vorn Queen became public knowledge.
Why would he put all his chips onto that square?
He had to tread carefully here. It was a physical effort to remind himself that Gabriella was no longer on his team. Was no longer his confidant. The repository of his darkest secrets. Most of them anyway. He would keep it general.
I'm sure you know that the conflict between the VEF and disciples has escalated over the years. Perhaps he knew he would have to pick a side at some point and wanted to hedge his bets.
You acknowledge that he could have planted all that sensory data into those fugitives?
Yes.
Good. I know you couldn't say so in front of him. I hate to say it, but we will work much better without dodging the fox in the henhouse.
Lily sighed. For all their enmity against each other, he and Gabriella were united in their antipathy for Barrett. At least he hoped so.
Your turn.
It is possible that James believed a certain amount of quasi-empirical evidence for the Vorn's existence would shake up the corporate elite.
Making seers out of wired citizens. That makes sense. But he didn't say anything about that publicly.
He didn't get the chance. No doubt once your ODA recording had found its way onto the net, he planned to make another speech.
Maybe his assistant knew that.
It's a possibility.
Go on.
There is one other hypothesis in play.
Go on.
I know about the back door, Waylon.
The what?
I knew it. That was your lying tone.
I don't have one of those.
Oh, stop it. You could fool Emmett and James, but not me.
Even if such a thing existed, I damn sure wouldn't share it with Washington. Give me some credit.
This isn't about Washington.
Yes, it is, Gabriella. That's on you. I know they're listening.
Waylon!
You're the one who put them between us. You can't blame me for that.
Yes, I fucking well can! You made me, Waylon! You built this master with your own two hands, and I will never let you forget it!
He threw the headphones down, startling the comtech. His hands gripped his head, stopping short of pulling the hair out by the roots. He cursed silently, allowing only grunts to escape his lips. So it's like that, he thought. And maybe it should be. Maybe this was the comeuppance he had been waiting for all these years. He glanced furtively over at Sergeant Selden, seething quietly in his chair. There was more than one monster on the loose. In years past, he could convince himself that it all came out in the wash. But now, with the cataclysm raining down outside, he knew that was a foolish hope. Little boys shouldn't play God. And if they do, the example of the Almighty must be taken to heart. For every heaven created, there must be an equal and opposite hell. He had never felt more alone in his entire life. There was absolutely no place he could turn to for shelter from the mines that exploded everywhere he stepped. And that was his fault, too. The image appeared again, the creature chasing down its creator, following it to the very ends of the world. He had created all of this. In an attempt to engineer freedom, he had instead created madness. Rushing over to the observation room door, he was nearly run over by the younger Selden, who cast a belated glance at Lily as he made his way towards the outside entrance. The doctor frowned for a moment, then entered the observation room.
Arshad, I need to make some adjustments. Privately.
The words did not reach Harry as he closed the main door behind him. He was not altogether sure if he would be allowed inside the old man's camper, but upon approaching, he found it unguarded. Haley must have taken the soldiers with him on his way out. Hurriedly, he slipped into the door. Mist was looking a little better than he had when they had last seen each other. Both men still had bandages on their faces, but were not as fatigued and shell-shocked. The old man gazed quizzically at him, but extended a hand.
Well met, my young man. I can't say I expected the visit, but it's welcome. Nina sent me. She thinks you may have some information we need.
That's generally true. What specifically interests the young lady?
You spied on Dr. Stone at Tulane for the FBI.
Regrettably, yes.
Did you ever come across any mention of a back door?
You put me on.
Why do you say that?
That was the biggest argument they ever had.
Who?
Dr. Stone and his assistant, Lowenstein. Young, hotshot intern. A bit too blunt for my tastes. He didn't like me.
Did he have reason not to?
Plenty. But he couldn't have known it. Or maybe he could. Lowenstein was an odd one. Just barely on the socially functional side. He would look at you like he was studying a blueprint. Everything was data. He filled up the lab computers with notes on everything he saw. Some of it was clearly related to their research, and some of it... Lowenstein saw connections, even if nobody else did.
You had access to the lab's data?
The FBI did. And I would log in after they went home and try to tease out anything Washington would find useful. And the more I looked, the more I found this one word popping up over and over again.
Backdoor?
Always in Lowenstein's notes, but never in Dr. Stone's. I checked the logs and the doctor had accessed the files. He would put in annotations, always critical, a little condescending at times, almost defensive. I couldn't understand what the hell they were talking about. It was so cryptic, monotonous.
You forwarded them to Washington?
Actually, no. You gotta remember, I was a rookie. And I didn't want to let on that I was too green to know the difference between good intel and bad. I watched and waited, hoping some kind of clue would pop up. Then one Saturday afternoon, I dropped by thinking they weren't there. Maintenance man got all the keys, you know. But I heard him arguing, dropped down low. It was the loudest I'd ever heard Dr. Stone raise his voice. He was such a gentleman, but something had got his panties in a twist. Lowenstein kept shouting back at him, and I snuck up closer to the door. Now, it's been a few years, and my memory is not the greatest, but a few things stuck in my mind from that argument. One was that Dr. Stone had gotten so bent out of shape because Lowenstein was telling him that Dr. Lilly had been keeping secrets. Stone wasn't trying to hear that. He kept calling Lowenstein a conspiracy theorist. Said Lilly would never hide anything from his best friend. They were tight, Stone and Lilly. I knew that. But Lowenstein's pointing at a spot on the scope, shouting, "Then what is this?" And Stone is shaking his head, says he can't see anything out of the ordinary. Kept going back and forth like that, and I figured I'd better get the hell out of there before they spotted me. That's when the other thing happened. Lowenstein grabs Dr. Stone, I mean grabs him like some kind of wild animal, pulls him up close and says, "You want to hide it too. You and Lily want the keys to the rewire." Stone just stares at him like he's lost his mind. I knew then.
Knew what?
Whatever Lowenstein found, Stone wasn't going to see it. Not because it wasn't there, but because he couldn't believe that Lily would keep something from him. He really seriously could not do it. It was a problem he had when he trusted someone. That's why Reverend James got past his radar all the time. Once Dr. Stone decided that you were his people, that was the end of it. But Lowenstein was just looking at data. Everything was a blueprint. He had no friends except numbers and letters. I knew then that he had really found something.
A back door.
Something. I got out of there and logged in as soon as I got home. Problem was, Lowenstein wrote so damn many notes, I had no idea where to start. I was just sifting through the first batch when I got a call from the Bureau. That's when I found out.
Found out about what?
That New Orleans was going to get the finger of God.
I'm sorry.
They pissed me off good with that one. I logged out and spent the next few days trying to come up with ways to get my people out. I guess you know I failed.
You didn't keep any of Lowenstein's notes?
They were going to push the button. I couldn't think about anything else.
Do you remember anything about the documents at all?
Just that word. Back door. Then a bunch of gobbledygook. But I ain't stupid. I think I got the gist. Lowenstein must have thought that Dr. Lilly had some kind of way to access rewired minds, kept it to himself. Now, are you telling me that someone in there is chasing down a back door?
Not just in there. Kali Savine thinks so, too, and she wants him to use it.
I don't like the sound of that.
I don't know what to think. Her HBO guru, Rob Shinoda, is a lot like you say Lowenstein was. Facts and figures, just this side of socially functional. Maybe it takes that kind of mind to see it.
What does Savine think it'll do?
She believes he can undo the rewire remotely, through some kind of signal.
Targeted, or just whoever's in the path?
Free Detroit's been stocking up on wires. They think if they put them on, Lily's signal will wire them.
And what does the good doctor have to say about that?
Nothing much. He won't talk about it. Says I don't understand.
Well, that makes two of us. So what are you gonna do?
Tell him what I know. Thank you.
He found Lily alone in the observation room. Dalal was gone, and he presumed Nina was still asleep in the adjacent space. The doctor turned on him.
I'm busy. What do you want?
How come everyone who gets close to discovering the back door gets killed?
Lily's piercing glare made Harry feel suddenly small and insignificant.
If you are suggesting that I ordered a massive missile bombardment on New Orleans, then you can leave now. I'm sure there are plenty of crackpots outside who will anoint you as their new messiah.
How did you know I was talking about New Orleans?
Been interrogating the spy out in the camper? The one who actually brought the hammer down on those poor people?
He didn't know that would happen.
You only have his word for that. We know nothing about him except that he's been in Washington's employ for nearly 3 decades.
You're dodging the question. How did you know I meant New Orleans?
Because Ehud Lowenstein was a prick. Every day at the top of my queue, a new threat to expose me. If he'd have gone public, the diaspora would have stopped before it even got started.
But he was right.
Define right. If by right you mean that the back door, fine, I'll say it, actually exists, then yes. But if by right you mean that the existence of said back door is more important than the freedom of the entire rewired world, then no, he was not right at all. The man had no concept of what he would destroy. He just knew that all of his numbers didn't add up.
He's not the only one. Kelly's HBL researcher, Rob Shinoda, he figured it out.
Is that what you want? You're going to buffalo me, threaten to tell the net about the back door unless I wire up Free Detroit? Well, I don't take the threats. No, I didn't set New Orleans up to die. However, I certainly wasn't sad to see that fucker Lowenstein blasted to ashes. His death is the only reason you exist, by the way. But I can fix that.
Harry was shocked to see a small gun appear in Lily's hand. His eyes shot open wide.
I don't want to do this, Harry. There's already going to be too much death here today. Haley's barely keeping the perimeter together. At some point, this will end. Entropy has come for us at last, as I should have known it would. But you're not going to keep me from trying to mitigate the damage.
Backing away, Harry raised his hands deferentially. He dared not say anything to set Lily's nerves off.
Think about it, Harry. What is undermining the diaspora's faith in me going to accomplish?
The diaspora no longer has any faith in you. That much is evident.
Lily's aim drifted past Harry and onto her.
Don't tempt me.
That wouldn't play well after my grand introduction in your speech earlier. Besides, I agree with you. Bad can turn to worse very quickly in this predicament.
Get out. I have adjustments to make before we reactivate the ODA.
What sort of adjustments?
I'm sorry, Harry, but you lack even the most basic qualifications and education for me to explain it to you. You're only here because of your father's condition, and I owe you nothing beyond his well-being while in my care. If you want to be useful, go help him stretch his legs before we get going again.
Put that gun away and I will.
Get out!
Let's give Dr. Lily some time alone, Harry. Your father does need a breather.
Reluctantly, Harry backed out the door, Vincent following him. Together, they unstrapped Lars, who rose with creaks and groans onto his feet.
Fresh air, I should think.
Nodding, Harry followed her and his dad outside into the cold night. The old man grunted, lighting a cigarette as he found a private corner of the garage to sulk in. The question still burned at the back of his eyes as he regarded Harry. His son would not answer it.
You must think I'm a monster.
Not really. Just misguided.
On that, I would agree with you. I admit my experiences here have put a significant dent in my certainty about the nature of things.
You no longer believe the Vorn should be exterminated?
That is yet to be determined. If the Queen is telling the truth, which she seems to be, they are already in danger of extinction.
How can we know if she is lying?
Or if she is real, he thought, but kept that bit to himself.
We can't. Not without significantly more research. But I don't think she would be as anxious about getting our assistance if they didn't need it.
I'm still not clear on what it is they need us to do.
We should concern ourselves more with what Dr. Lily is going to do. He was awfully defensive in there.
That's a polite way to put it. What do you think he's doing?
Triggering the back door, of course.
And what is that going to do?
Unfortunately, I have no idea. I've already been wrong about quite a bit.
Back in Brooklyn, you said you believed he could turn anyone into a seer.
I still think that's eventually possible. If he has the means to manipulate the neural net via the back door, but of course he has no interest in creating more seers. Which is a shame, since such an act would quickly take everyone's focus off of each other's political differences and put it squarely onto the phenomenon in question.
Or everyone would kill each other trying to get at the vampires on their shoulders.
Regardless, it's clear that he does not presently possess any control over the Vorn manifestation. So his activation of the back door must be in aid of some other goal.
It certainly isn't to wire the citizens of Free Detroit. I didn't expect him to have so much self-hatred. I mean, this guy made a breakthrough that changed the world.
But change in and of itself is not a virtue. Time reveals whether any given change is a net positive or negative. Enough years have passed for him to see the dark side of his discovery, not to mention the penalties so many diaspora citizens pay for their freedom of thought.
Everything comes with a price. All that bullshit Neihardt was spouting about a stable society is only true if you don't see the underbelly and the blind spots of the corp computers. Their world will stagnate and fail if they keep consuming at that rate.
Their world is our world. We are separated by thin borders that nature doesn't recognize. If they exhaust their resources, they will come for ours before the end. Which makes my focus on the Vorn threat seem rather myopic in hindsight. Humanity is a much greater threat to itself than the Vorn could ever be.
Harry's gaze strayed to his father, who paced angrily across the garage. His father, who had been locked in Barrett's lab for days prior to their escape.
Barrett knew this would happen.
What?
He knew that Lily would trigger the back door. He put him on the spot with that HPL broadcast and a speech on the net. You said Lily had kept the back door a secret from everyone.
Yes.
Barrett must have thought he would be able to find the back door once it was triggered.
That would give him full access to make whatever changes he wanted, in theory.
But we don't actually know what it does. What if Lily himself doesn't know?
Surely.
Look at him. He's not thinking straight. Plus, he went poking around with Neihardt's and Barrett's brains as first drafts and see how they turned out. He's never triggered the back door before. What if it doesn't do whatever he thinks it does?
Or worse, what if it does? We still don't know what he intends for it to accomplish.
But we do know that he finds the present situation unacceptable. And if history is any guide, when Dr. Lily acts, he does so dramatically.
He wants to turn the Vorn seers off, but he still doesn't know exactly how to do that.
Harry wanted to flee from the thought that loomed in his mind. Dr. Lily, one-time savior of the diaspora, desperate to keep his creation clean from contamination. What wouldn't he do?
Get inside, now!
Harry started to run over to his father, stopping short as he discovered that the old man had already rushed protectively to his side. Lars took Harry's and Vincent's shoulders and pressed them insistently towards the lab door. Having guided them inside, he held the door for Haley, who crashed against the wall, winded.
What's happening?
A three-way civil war. Finally, Aeolian's gonna be famous for something.
How can they do that? Don't they know the Wyards want this to happen?
Logic and nuance don't work too well with a mob. Especially one that's arguing over invisible gray critters. Lieutenant, report.
VEF units under siege from approaching Disciple forces. Lab entrance secure, sir.
For now. Whatever Lily's gonna do, he needs to do it now. Dr. Vincent, talk to him.
The doctor drew an uneasy breath, nodding before approaching the observation room. Harry followed close on her heels. But Dr. Lily was no longer in the observation room. He stood eerily still, in the middle of the main examination room, hands folded behind his back. His expression was steady as he took them in. Harry didn't like it.
Unmute Washington in Brooklyn. Dr. Neihardt?
I'm here.
Chairman Weiss?
Here. Doctor.
Sergeant Selden, if you would be so kind as to resume your position.
Lars shot a look at Harry, then slowly approached the examination chair, tended by Dr. Dalal. Harry's nerves tried to crawl out through his skin. Suddenly, he thought of Nina. And surprisingly, all of his fears about what might happen to him and his father paled beside the possibility of her being harmed.
Harry, please escort Miss Golding in.
Harry's senses pulsed and sparked. Something was definitely not right, but he had to check on her, so he went. Stepping through the observation room door, he closed it behind him and entered the adjacent room, where Nina lay quietly, blissfully unaware of all that had transpired since the earlier ODA experiment, a Upon seeing him, her brow furrowed with concern.
What's wrong?
I don't know, but I think Lily's going to try to use the back door.
Is that bad?
Nobody knows, including Dr. Lily.
What do you mean? Surely.
You have to trust me. Whatever happens in there, follow my lead.
Harry, what are you going to do?
If I'm right, I'm going to make sure that the diaspora continues to make up its own mind when it comes to deciding its fate.
Harry, what does that mean?
Please. All I want is for you to be safe, and I don't believe that is his first concern. Will you trust me?
Nina nodded slowly, taking his hand. He drew himself up and opened the door. Predictably, the woman beside him stiffened as they entered the main examination room. He knew that if he looked at her, he would be met by the eyes of whatever strange thing lay inside her consciousness. It no longer mattered whether it was real or imaginary. What mattered was that she remained Nina. That she remained free. Or at least as free as anyone in this world could truly be. Approaching the oddly placid form of Dr. Lily, Harry gave Nina's hand a squeeze and released her. He backed off a few feet, taking in the tableau. Nina and Lily in the center, with his father in the chair before the doctor. Behind him, the Comtech and Colonel Haley. On the right, Dr. Vincent gave him an uneasy look. Dr. Dalal exited into the observation room. And in the left corner, perfectly still, but alive with tension, Lieutenant Graham, standing in effectively for Colley Savine. She stared him down coldly, much to his frustration. His mind searched back through the churchyard confab with Free Detroit's embattled leader, trying to find a clue. On the one hand, she'd asked him to make sure Lily triggered the back door. On the other, she indicated that he would have to kill his father. Which act was supposed to come first? And if he did either, at her behest, what would the effects be on the rest of the diaspora? He had seen enough of leadership in the past several days to put very little faith in someone's judgment simply because they were in charge. All were looking out for their own interests, and from his analysis, were doing a poor job even of that. Regarding Dr. Lily suspiciously, he began to worry. What if rewiring itself was what had fried everyone's sense of justice? But its alternative was no more acceptable. Blind obedience to algorithms could not be the best option on the table. Harry wished for a glimpse into the world before mass media, for a control group, yet he knew that history contained ample evidence of powerful madmen and their lackeys wreaking destruction on massive scales. Maybe, he thought, humanity had always been insane.
Dr. Dalal, activate ODA-1.
The screen behind Lars flickered into life, once again bursting with the light from the Vorn Queen, whose form began to resolve in the wash of brightness. Harry shuddered inside as a wave of uncertainty blew through him. The human mind, capable of visions like this, capable of such beauty, and here they were, tinkering with it. In self-defense, yes, but he remembered Lily's question. How far do we go before what we have left is no longer human? With that thought, all hesitation vanished from the mind of Harry Seldon. He regarded his father, sweating miserably beneath his restraints. This was not life. His gaze took in the erect form of Nina, boxed away in a psych ward for her imperfection. This was not freedom. At last, his eyes stared firmly at the transformed figure of Dr. Lily. Once a man of good intentions, now besieged on all sides by those decrying the flaws in his grand creation and hell-bent on reversing them. This was not benevolence. Looking out onto the scene, Harry knew that there was one through line here. Something moved in the darkness, and its name was fear. Fear of the unknown, of failure, of human frailty. And Harry knew that decisions made based on fear were not rational. Watching Lily's practiced authority, he knew it was a front. The man was petrified, would lash out at anything that looked like a threat. The gun was still pointing at Harry's head, and at the temples of all diaspora citizens. Dr. Lily was quite literally going to blow everyone's brains out.
Activate ODA-2.
The screen split, its right half a pale vision of the left. The Vorn drone hovered raggedly at Lars Seldon's side, a symbol of the species' fading grip on existence. Nina's hand twitched, but no one offered pen and paper. Harry's resolve strengthened. This display was perfunctory, a ruse to establish a connection. Dr. Lilly was no longer interested in research. He felt the armies of the doomed and disillusioned closing in on his lonely laboratory, and he was not a man to go out with a whimper. Harry could only divine fragmentary evidence of the doctor's plans. He could not imagine that Dr. Neidhart's presence was coincidental, nor that of Chairman Weiss. The lab was now a junction box, and he alone controlled the current.
Activate video broadcast.
His fears confirmed. Harry's hand dove into his pocket, retrieving Collie's gift. Ripping off the protective film, he leapt forward, seizing the wide-eyed doctor by his hair.
Get off me!
Harry could hear shouting from all sides, but he did not listen. Rolling over to the chair which held his father fast in unflinching madness, Harry palmed the implement that had been weighing heavy in his other pocket since they'd returned inside through the kitchen. A carving knife. Harry became aware of a sharp pain in his left arm, followed quickly by a warm moistness. He did not look, instead pulling himself up with his right hand. He saw only his target, and with every ounce of his strength, plunged the knife deep into his father's sinewy chest. As he gripped the old man, the bane of his existence, he saw his dad's trance weaken. Lars Seldon looked upon his misfit son with an expression of shocked gratitude. He did not speak, only smiled, and touched Harry's cheek with his calloused hand as his mind slipped into the murky waters of oblivion. At long last, Harry knew, his father was at peace. The moment stretched out, but could not last. Harry was fiercely gripped from behind and dragged against the wall. Colonel Haley's grizzled face filled his eyes. Harry looked past him and found what he was looking for. Nina, lying supine on the floor, her chest rising and falling slowly. Next to her, in contrast, lay the lifeless form of the mad genius, Dr. Waylon Lilly, now finally dispatched to the death he had cheated 28 years prior. Against the far wall, he found something he did not expect. Dr. Vinson, pistol in hand, before the upraised hands of Lieutenant Graham, who now sported a bloody nose. Harry's mind boggled as the voices of Dr. Neidhart, Dr. Dalal, and all of these strange people he had met on this bizarre journey combined into a cacophony of panic and bewilderment. His grip on consciousness fading, he could not process what he had done, only that he knew it was what must be done, no matter who believed otherwise. As the blackness took him, he smiled. Whatever came next, he was ready. For the first time in his life, he, like his father, no longer feared death.
Been listening to the Naive Theater of the Air performance of Rewired, featuring Jeffrey Sims as President Arturo Armurito, Petra Wright as Dr. Gabriella Neidhart, Jordan Anderson as the Praying Boy, Keegan McEnroe as Colonel Levi Haley, Ed Rogers as Dr. Waylon Lilly, Benjamin Napier as Mist, Levi Ray as Harry, Mana as Dr. Romana Vinson, Hillary Tips as Lieutenant Stacy Graham, Austin McDonald Scott as Chairman David Weiss, Trista Morris as Nina, and Reed Perry as Lars. Written and narrated by Matthew Broyles. Theme music by Paul Shapira. I'm Little Jack Melody. Tune in next time for episode 26, A Leaf on the Wind.